evening, everybody, and welcome to the Positude Podcast. I am your host, Maggie Hart, and I'm looking forward to spending another hour with you this week, spreading positivity, hopefully sharing some knowledge, uplifting your spirits, and just enjoying each other's company. We're going to talk a little bit this week about some current events that I find are pertinent, and we're going to talk a little bit about codependency and highly sensitive people, because I do believe that there are a lot more highly sensitive people out there than we initially realized, or maybe we're starting to realize. Maybe people are developing and recognizing that they were highly sensitive all along, but just never were aware of it. They reacted to certain situations differently from other people. Their thought processes are different from other people. And they never could understand it, and it became a source of frustration at some times because they didn't understand why they were different. Maybe they thought something was wrong with them. Maybe they became overly angry at the rest of the outside world for not understanding and appreciating how they felt or not having the same thought processes that they did. There's a lot to the whole sensitivity spectrum. And I do believe that a lot of people are coming into their own, and as they learn and grow and discover different personality traits that they need to work on, or just maybe get into a method of holistic healing, and so their vibrations are raised as a result and their channels are opening so they're more sensitive, they're understanding that, wow, I've been really different for a really long time, and highly sensitive, being labeled as highly sensitive, kind of fits me. And that's not something that I ever thought about before. I just thought that I was angry, anxious, frustrated, depressed, secluded myself because I couldn't deal with outside society. But what they're starting to realize maybe is, wow, I'm just super sensitive, and I never knew that. And I feel as though so much of the population that is discovering these qualities as they're on the path to being whole, being complete, being healed, ascended, whatever your thought process is, they're discovering a whole new facet to their personality and to their persona. And some of this is as the ego sheds away and as we work on those things we talked about in the two-part program that I did, they're becoming more aware of these as well. But however we're aware of these traits, we need to kind of pay some attention to that and discover what maybe our triggers can be in that aspect as well, and what can help us to bring a better sense of balance to us at the end of the day after we've been out in that hectic work or school, or even as a house mom or as a housewife, just the people that we encounter at the grocery store can affect our personalities, or rather affect our moods. So it's all encompassing, and it spreads to anybody in any area, no matter where you go, no matter what you do. If you're sensitive, you're sensitive. So other people's emotions and moods are definitely going to affect you. And I actually did a social experiment for the past week and a half. And what I decided to do was reflect back people's behaviors toward me. And I found it to be intriguing, but it also brought things to the table that I think helped people to recognize how they were being, although initially it became a source of frustration. Let me explain. As a general rule, I'm pretty optimistic. I try and always see the good in a situation and be positive and spread that energy and vibration, because I'm well aware of the fact that when I live in a negative vibration or I'm brought down to a negative vibration, I'm not able to heal my body. I'm not able to have the vibration, the constant positive vibration that helps me to reach my goals. And again, manifesting is a new age term, and I'm hesitant to use it, but that seems to be the only term that tends to fit in a lot of these situations. Because Creator gave us these abilities, as I've talked about repeatedly, and I will continue to talk about, these abilities that we have that were given to us by God, by Spirit, by Universe, however you choose to see it. Vibrationally speaking, we need to stay in that positive upbeat vibration. I have said it till I'm blue in the face. You're going to continue to hear me repeat this because it needs to sink in. And repetition sometimes is the only way that it sinks in. But I found myself in some situations in the past couple of weeks, months, where it's been hard because I've been a little bit more fluctuating on my boundaries than I normally would be, because there have been people that have been really needing my support and needing my help. And I feel that they're really trying to be better, and they're trying to heal. And so as a result, I kind of blurred the lines a little bit on my boundaries, which is not something that I would typically do. So as a result, what I found was, and I know this characteristically, I know this inherently, I know this from everything that I've learned along my journey to become more of a positive person and to become more self-healing and to become in the vibration where I'm positive to allow my goals to be reached, because I'm living in the vibration, I'm matching the vibration of what I need to be or what I want. The whole alternate universe, we could go there. We broached on that a little bit, but that's also another aspect of that. Setting the energy and the tone, what we think, what we feel, is what we're creating. So all of that comes into play. And as I said, I've been kind of blurring the lines and been a little bit lax in my work in helping people and in my work in supporting people that I love and care about. And at the time, I'm like, oh, it's okay. I'll just blur this line a little bit and I'll get back to balance. And what I discovered was happening was, because of the negativity and the personality traits and the moods, it was bringing me down. And so, as much as I tried to be positive, as much as I tried to be reinforcing, the negativity became overwhelming. And for my own self-preservation, there are times that you just need to step back. We talked about that a little bit last week. And let the person do their own thing. That's their free will choice. You can teach. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't always make them drink. And if there comes a time where you've exhausted your energy, or you're starting to exhaust your energy by trying to help somebody else, you really need to step back and balance. Because as an empath, specifically speaking, as an empath, what was happening was I was discovering that draining, I was tired, I was getting irritable, the negativity was rubbing off on me, and the comments, you know, that were made to me in conversation were very hurtful and very flippant and very nasty. And I knew that wasn't the essence in which they were said, but the way that they were portrayed made me feel really crummy. And so I had to step back and I had to reevaluate and I had to get back to balance. And then I was able to move forward again from my positive vibes and try to be more positive. And then again, I felt like it was a little better, but there were still these comments here and there. There were these flippant things that were said that were just really mean and nasty and just very selfish and very degrading. And so I had to step back again. And as a result, the negativity really started to play on me even harder. And so I decided, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to reflect. I'm going to reflect those behaviors back to those people that are exhibiting those behaviors to me, because I've tried to be positive. I've tried to coach. I've tried to help teach. I've tried to spread the positive vibes, and sometimes it would work, sometimes it would be effective, other times it fell flat. And I let it in, it started to affect my moods. As much as I know not to do this, it was doing this. And so there again, you know, we're all learning, we're all morphing, we're all growing, and I'm not somebody that's afraid to admit my faults. And I'm not somebody that's afraid to tell you. If I make a mistake, I'm going to look to work on that mistake and fix it and improve upon it. Nobody's perfect. We're all on the same journey together, and it's holding hands. It's being part of that drop in the pond, that ripple in the pond. And when we share, I feel, you know, as a counselor, as a healer, as a helper, as a spiritual aid, as somebody who helps people to understand what's going on with them and how to help them heal spiritually, physically, emotionally, I don't think that I'm going to get anywhere if I'm like 90% or 95% of the population out there that has these programs that is going to be like, I'm going to teach you how to do this and effectively, and I'm going to fix all your problems, and you're going to be great, and you're going to thank me for this afterwards, and meanwhile I'm making thousands of dollars off of you. I just, for me personally, from a moral standpoint, I feel as though if I don't share what I'm going through at times and my experiences, excuse me, my allergies are acting up this week, and so I'm clearing my throat and I'm sounding a little more froggy the last couple episodes than normal, and I apologize for that. I don't feel as though my clients would appreciate me as much. You know, you can't go up and be some guru on a mountain and not share what you've been through and not express the fact that sometimes you make mistakes too, and there are things that you're still working on, and we're all learning and growing. We're growing together. It's so important that I think I share that with everybody, and so that we understand that all the same, we're all learning and growing. It's so awesome working with people and coming from that place of honesty, I think, because it forms a stronger bond. I feel as though when I talk to people about my life experiences, they can relate. And I feel as though, at least for myself, I bond better with people that I feel are more honest and open about their triumphs, but also their pitfalls, because it helps me to appreciate and also feel better about the fact that, wow, that person's so much more knowledgeable than I am, or so much better at one thing or another than I am, but yet they're humble. Like, they show me how they changed, and they show me what made them better, and they admit to me that they're fallible just like I am. And so I personally appreciate those traits. And as a teacher and a healer, I'm also willing to share some of my experiences and what has been successful and what hasn't. We all process things differently. We all have our own perspectives and our own viewpoints on things. But another thing that I feel is very important is that we need to respect other people's perspectives and opinions. And judgment is something that comes into play quite often when I'm dealing with people, because what I see is, as a society as a whole, we're very judgmental. And I feel as though we have some scenarios sometimes where we're trying to express a thought or a feeling or talk about our day. And sometimes we come up against people that are just, well, you should do this and you should do that and you should do this and you should do that, and I would do this, or I would handle it this way, or I wouldn't handle it that way, or whatever. And then sometimes there's like a passive-aggressive kind of feel that goes along with that. And in a case like that, I just feel as though a little bit of respect would go a lot longer way. In other words, my perspective and the way that I do things may not be the way that you choose to do things. But that doesn't make my way right or wrong, or yours right or wrong. It's the way that I choose, just like you choose the way that you do things. And so when we're in conversation with people, when we're dealing with people, and I just had this happen the other day with a friend of mine whose husband's retired. And so she's kind of going through this transitional process where his whole career, her whole career, sometimes she worked, sometimes she was a caregiver, but he always worked a totally different shift than she did. And as he retired and they were now home together all of the time, they realized what I think they've kind of realized all along, that that separation period is what helped their marriage be as successful as it was for all of those years. Because rather than really learning the ins and outs of each other's personality, and rather than working together to blend their different aspects of their personalities together and be able to cohabit peacefully and work on things and talk about issues that they were having and share more of their emotions and share more of what they did throughout the day and how it made them feel, their triumphs, their victories, what frustrated them, what made them happy, and just be able to bond as a couple. Instead of doing that all of the years they were married, 30, 35 years, whatever it is so far, they just existed. They lived different lives, different schedules, and it worked for them, because what they realized was, like, when they were together on holidays and stuff, there'd be almost an edginess after the day together. It was like they weren't really getting along or gelling, even though they'd been in a quote-unquote successful marriage for many years. They never really got to know each other. And when they did get to know each other, they discovered that they didn't like each other very much. Or maybe they didn't have as much in common as they did when they were younger, or maybe they just didn't have a lot in common to begin with, but they never, you know, really focused on that. They got married, they had jobs, they had children. That was their life. But each other wasn't as much of a part of their lives as it should have been. And societally speaking, that's the case a lot of times. You know, back in the day, people got married, they had children, and they ignored their issues, or they hid their issues, and it wasn't something that they talked about with other people. Everything was a facade. They'd have people come over for dinner, entertainment, and everything was great. And a lot of that mindset, in my opinion, has carried over even more so into social media now, because now it's all about how wonderful you have it and how great you have it and how much money you have and what designer car you wear or the perfume you wear or how much you spend on your makeup and hair or how much you spend on that boat that you got or motorcycle or whatever. It's even more magnified to me. The ego has even more come into play. The facade of I have everything when they have nothing is even more of a prevalent thing today, and it's very distressing to me. I have so many friends that I look at their social media that talk about how wonderful their lives are, and as an empath, I not only feel and I know, but also from their verbal expressions, from their talking and complaining and bitching to me for years about how miserable they are and how unhappy they are, I know from their words. But yet to look at their page, it's like, oh my gosh, they live this golden life. And so much of that is just so much worse now, I feel, than it was back in the 80s, 90s, 60s, 50s, 70s, when the older people were starting the relationships and continuing the relationships. But that was an aspect back then. And it's, you know, people just didn't really get to know each other. Things happen and people do change as well. And so their personalities may have changed over the course of their lifetime. One may have gone down a spiritual path, one may not have. One may have gone down a different spiritual path than the other. Maybe they didn't experience spirituality at all. And that's probably, honestly, a good reason for where they are now. Because they didn't have anything to sink their teeth into and to hold on the faith that allowed them to be strong in times of need and allowed them to have patience and self-control and gentleness and all of those things. And they weren't able to, when they were frustrated, properly vent their emotions because they never learned how. Or if they were sad, even if they were happy, they never learned how to fortuitously express their emotions, right? So anyway, the social experiment that I did. Let me preface this by saying that I've been so extremely busy the last, well, lifetime, but especially the last 6 or 7 months and this week and a half in particular, I didn't have a lot of time to do this because I just didn't have a lot of human interaction. But there were phone calls, there were texts, there were brief visits, there were face-to-face encounters throughout the course of the last week and a half where I did interact with people that I'm very close with, that I care about very much, and then just more casual acquaintances and friends as well. Going to buy plants at a nursery, even. And what I decided to do, because in some of the longer-standing relationships, the people that were constantly portraying the negativity or acting a certain way, when I've been trying to coach and teach and guide and help them to see a different perspective, a different way to handle things that would be better for them and more healing for them. In one of these relationships, this is a girl that I've been friends with for like 20 years. And she'll come to me and she'll say, "What would you do?" or "How would you handle this?" And so over the years, we've worked together and I've shown her different ways and I've told her different things that might be a little more advantageous than the way she was handling things. And so in situations like this, I decided I'm going to do a little social experiment. And for the next couple of weeks, if I've tried to help, and if they've asked me for advice, or if I've seen scenarios where it really wasn't a good situation emotionally, and the person was really struggling, and I've tried, and I've coached, and I've guided, rather than just take my distance, and in some cases I did take my distance or take a brief distance and get back to balance, I decided to reflect back their behaviors toward me, or to me. So if they were expressing frustration over their husband, or whatever, or they were continually interrupting, or they were coming out with really mean things, I'd verbalize. And then after I verbalized, I noticed in some situations that it became lesser and it seemed as though they were really trying to work on that behavior, or maybe they were just biting their tongue. However, what I noticed was the behavior was still continuing, and so in the course of the successive conversations, you know, texting, a few phone calls, whatever, visiting briefly, I would reflect their behavior back to them. And boy, they didn't like that very much. What I encountered was aggression, sometimes anger, a sense of exasperation. Sometimes without saying, but I felt, wow, I'm trying to be a better person here and I'm trying to be more positive and you're bringing me down. And that was the case in my girlfriend. The person that was normally very positive and supporting and trying to show her the right way now became somebody who was mirroring her behavior back at her. And that went over like a lead balloon. And what I realized was she thought about it. And the next time that we had that brief conversation, that brief interaction, she was happier. She was more vibrant. She was trying to put the positivity into the conversation, and she stopped with the backhanded comments. They became less frequent. And I think what it triggered in her, at least I hope what it triggered, was another sense of self-evaluation. Why is Maggie being like that? She's never like that with me. Why is she acting like that? But I did vocalize in the beginning, and I did say, look, I feel this way. and let's work on that. Let's change it. Let's, you know, whatever. Let's do something. But this is how I feel. So I gave her the opportunity to think about it and gnaw on it. And then when it didn't seem like it was having that much of an effect, I reversed it and I mirrored the emotions. And I really believe it made her have some self-evaluation, and it became better, and it became better. And then by the third time we spoke, she was back to normal, or at least back to balance. In another scenario that I encountered, I discovered that the person was trying to use the same tactics against me that I had taught them and that we had talked about, which was distance or cut things off or say goodnight or whatever. And I kind of chuckled at myself, and I'm like, that's interesting. And then I responded in kind, positive with positive, and it seemed to help the situation a little bit. However, I have learned to reestablish my boundaries, and when someone's being rude or nasty, I have to tell them about it. I have to explain how I'm feeling. We need to talk about these things so that they're aware, just like I want to be told. But the main thing in all of this is our perception, and a lot of what I found is that it goes right back to those two episodes that I did about overcoming trauma and healing the ego. There's still a sense of ego there that needs to be stripped away in some cases. And until that happens, their perception is going to continue to be skewered. They're going to think they're right, and I'm going to be wrong. And they're going to think their way is better, and I'm not doing things as successfully or the same way that they would do it. So in essence, it's wrong. Maybe I'm taking a little more time. Maybe I'm doing things my way, but I'm doing things this way for a purpose and a reason. And what I started to do for a brief hot minute there is I was trying to be a people pleaser. And I was, in essence, killing myself and my body emotionally, physically, and spiritually to try and make somebody else happy. But what was happening was I was making myself tired and sick. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to take a breather. I need to relax. I need to rest. I need to get myself back into balance. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do as much as I can. And just like I've always done, be very happy, thankful, and grateful for what I've gotten done at the end of the day. But I'm going to set my limitations. And when I've done enough, I'm going to stop. And when I'm tired, I'm going to quit. And I want to get my body back to balance. I want to get myself back to full health so that I continue on in a way that's healthy spiritually, emotionally, and physically for me. Because I can't help people, and I can't teach people, and I can't be an effective friend or partner or acquaintance or mom if my glass is empty. And I know this. I know this. But I had to be reminded of that because I'm human. And I feel as though anybody that cares about my friendship and cares about a personal relationship with me will respect that and not want to live my life by their guidelines or what they think is right. But they'll appreciate me, and they'll value me, and they'll respect me, and they'll want to continue a relationship with me as I am. And I need to take care of myself as well as others. So my girlfriend's better off. I know that she wants to continue our relationship, and I know that she values me as a person, as a friend, as a confidant, as a teacher, as a healer. And so she's coming along, you know, and that's beautiful to see. I love that because it's all about respecting each other. Inherently, as we learn and as we grow, the more we try to control a situation, and you've heard me say this so many times before, the less control we're going to end up having. Because if we continue to push and push and push, we're going to lose the things that we truly value and love. But then from a codependency standpoint, if we have codependency traits, we're going to go right back to that same old thing. You know, I've lost everything that I've had in my life. And I've done and done and done for people, and they didn't appreciate me. They didn't value me. And in some cases, in many cases, that may be the case. But that's not the case in every situation. Sometimes with codependency, what happens is we do what we think we do what's best, and we think we do what's right, but we try and force a situation or force somebody to change their emotions and their feelings or force them to do what we want them to do on our timeline. And that's not a healthy way to live. So codependency is kind of a slippery slope. We have to be able to set our boundaries and try and help them work through the codependency without becoming victims of it. And it also comes back to taking responsibility for your actions. If you've made mistakes in the past, and you may have been taken advantage of, and you may have been badly hurt, and you may have gone through a lot of personal trauma, but that doesn't mean that every single person that you encounter is gonna be that same bad person or people that have the same traits that you've dealt with before. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is if you've truly done everything that you could and the person was toxic, then you need to step away from that situation, absolutely, for self-preservation. However, if your perception is that you did everything that you were supposed to and you tried so hard, but you were inherently abrasive and rude and mean, that may be a lot of the reasons that you lost what you loved as well. And in some cases, there are combinations. Two toxic people are not a good situation, trust me. So when you have that kind of environment going on, it's not healthy for either one of you to stay in that kind of relationship. However, there are different scenarios and there are different personalities in every situation. And in codependency, a lot of people are like, I did this and that and this and that and this and that and this and that for that person, and they're just not appreciating me, and they're not doing things the way I want them to do that. And, you know, that forcefulness comes through, that control side comes through. And that can be very damaging. It's something that we may not be aware of initially, but maybe when somebody brings it to our attention, it's a little easier to stop and reflect and say, well, why was she that way to me when she hasn't been that way before? What's causing the changes in her personality? And in a codependent mindset, they may turn it around on you and say, well, Maggie's just under a lot of pressure. She's trying to get a lot of things done, and she's tired, and she's overworked, and she's stressed, and so therefore she's just being a bitch. No, not always. Maybe I'm given what I got. Social experiment. We can't control what other people do, but we control how we handle things. And that's a lesson here. Try and give somebody else the benefit of the doubt. Put yourself in their position and try and understand how they're feeling. But don't always make an assumption. Ask them, talk to them, share your feelings. Share your feelings and get to know the other person. My girlfriend's learning to do that with her husband, and I feel as though it will be very fortuitous for them. They're learning a whole different behavior structure. They've lived 30, 35 years in one mode. And they realized that they didn't like themselves and each other, but mostly themselves. And when they started to work on that, things started to get better. It's never too late to change. They say a leopard can't change their spots. And in some cases, that's true. If there's truly some behavioral issues that they refuse to work on, sometimes a mental issue, sometimes a physiological issue in the brain that they can't truly control, those are exceptions. You know, there are exceptions to these rules. Not everything is always cut and dried. However, if we take a self-evaluation and we talk to people and we let them know how we feel and we share our feelings in an open, honest, non-judgmental fashion, boy, we can learn a lot about people in general, and that goes for any type of relationship. The cashier at the grocery store, our best friend, whatever. I think this would be a good time to take a break. You're going to hear my good buddy Pat Carr play his music. He plays my introductory music, my ending music, and a lot of times my break time music. Also, please support the network. We are totally listener funded and appreciate anything that you can send our way to help us going and to be able to bring you these quality shows. Also, check out the main page, jump on the chat room, see if there are other programs out there that you would like to listen to. I bet you'd find something else you can enjoy on the network as well as my show. If you want to support, please just hit that donate button or get a hold of the owner, and I'm sure that he would accept whatever you're able to give. Every little bit helps. If you have your own business and you want to be a superstar, please consider buying a slot on our station for advertising. It's a great way to promote your business and support us as well. And if you don't have a formal commercial, contact the owner. I bet he and the producer can come up with an amazing commercial for you. After the break, we're going to talk about some sensitive person traits and some current events, and we'll spread some more positivity. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
My radio station, play a little music on the air, spread a little love to the people out there. Gonna go out walking in the world, breathe a little clean fresh air, find a place to offer up a silent prayer. All those years I spent in lonely isolation, claiming I had no regrets for the things I'd done. Of my mind, dream my body, think of my soul, but now I'm fine, 'cause I know that my Lord has made me whole. I'm gonna buy a radio station, play a little music on the air, spread a little love to the people out there. Gonna do some talking about Jesus, telling everybody everywhere, turn the people on to the love that's there.
And we're back. Thank you for joining me for the second half of this episode of the Positude Podcast. I am your host, Maggie Hart. That song was Radio Station by my good buddy, Pat Carr. Pat's an amazing original artist from Louisiana, and you can check him out at http://www.itunes.com/Pat Carr. If you find yourself in need of spiritual guidance and emotional healing and spiritual cleansing, anything like that, please contact me at Maggie_Hart@Outlook.com. That's Maggie, M-A-G-G-I-E, _Hart, H-E-A-R-T, at Outlook.com. I also do intuitive guidance. I do marital counseling. I do a whole bunch of things. So please contact me, and let's help each other. Okay, I want to talk about current events a little bit, because I feel as though this information is pertinent. I listened to a show by Billy Bean, who gets her information from, among others, somebody named Hal Turner. I feel it's important information because things are really starting to heat up here, and so as a result, we're going to see some shifts on the planet. But Sunday, last Sunday, Iran President Razi, his foreign minister and governor, pilots, co-pilot security, about eight people, Iranian political figures, and then the security and pilot and co-pilot were killed. Supposedly, there was a tracking device that was put on their helicopter. They caught the guy that did it. He admitted to it. Russia says the plane was brought down by anti-aircraft missiles. Actually, the helicopters were brought down by anti-aircraft missiles. And the citizen of India was associated with the embassy of India in Iran, and he claimed to have been doing so on behalf of Israel. That's the guy that put the tracking device on the helicopter. Bodies were recovered, but they were unidentifiable. And she claims that the shadow U.S. deep state government is behind it. Later on in her show, she blames the shadow U.S. government, the U.K. U.S. government, and the deep state for this and these other events that happened this past week. Slovakian Prime Minister Robert Fico, there was also an attempted assassination on him. And she also said that's associated with the shadow U.S. government, CIA. That was on the 15th in Slovakia. He is recovering. He was opposed to NATO, didn't want NATO troops in Slovakia, and he did not want to send Slovakian troops to the Ukraine. On 5/15, there was a coup plot in Turkey to take down their president. And then on 5/16, also a threat to the Serbian president. And as a result, as of Sunday, according to her, gold and silver prices went up and are continuing to climb. She also goes on to say that the International Criminal Court in the Netherlands issued an international arrest warrant for Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu and the Minister of Defense, Yoav Gallant, and three Hamas leaders. And she said that the U.S. and Israel are not members of the ICC, but Gaza, East Jerusalem, and the West Banks are members. So interesting information. Just keep your eyes open, and it's going to cause some ripples and some shifts. Things are starting to happen. It seems as though there's a full court press on to essentially get rid of anybody that is opposed to having troops in the Ukraine or supporting that movement that's happening in the Ukraine. She also reported that U.S. forces are in the Gaza Strip now, ostensibly to help people, but militarily speaking, the experts don't think that's the case. It's to prepare that area and control that area for what's coming in the future. So we'll have to see about that. We've known for a long time that the forces at play, the bad guys, have wanted to create a world war and strife and friction for many different reasons, and these are just some more examples of that. It's also a reason that I tell people on a regular basis to please take note, prepare food, water, alternate sources of heat for your families, for yourselves and your families, and also to develop those strong community ties to find your tribe, as it were, and make sure that you have a safe spot to go to should need be out of a city also, if at all possible. Gardening season is upon us. I've told people for years, I will continue to tell people to please grow a garden. Even if you're in an apartment, you can do container gardening. It's not a lot of work and effort, and you will be thankful for the yields that you can provide to yourself and your family should you not be able to buy things at the grocery store. Also, buying non-GMO heirloom seeds, organically harvested and grown plants for your garden, and continuing on that journey where once you get the plants, continue to treat them organically for pesticides and to help them grow better. Do the copper. Please, please, please investigate the copper. I've personally done this now for 2 years. I've gotten a 30% more at least yield on my vegetables. They were healthier. They were happier. There were less bugs. Look into companion planting for different plants that you can put in, like nasturtium. I put nasturtium in my garden. That also helps to control the bugs. The bugs go to the flowers rather than to your vegetables and fruits. Please investigate. It's a really good investment into your livelihood, your good health, and the future for you and your family. Plus, it gives you pleasure. You're able to work with your hands, even if it's in a pot of dirt. You're able to work a little bit with nature and experience and benefit from the products that you will have as a result. He said this metaphorically, but I'm going to take it literally in this sense. to see things in the seed, that is genius. And that was Lao Tzu. Food for thought. No pun intended. Something else I wanted to discuss tonight is in relation to the shifts in the world, the shifts in the planet, our personal journeys and where we are with those, whether or not you've even started to traverse your own personal journey, whether you're thinking about it and just haven't started yet. Always, please, now is the time. Now is the time. But we have earlier, I was talking about a little bit, very highly sensitive people here. And people are starting to realize their sensitivities and their gifts that they may not have been aware of before. And as a result, highly sensitive people have some traits and some qualities that we really need to pay attention to, especially if you're recently discovering that you're highly sensitive and you didn't know that you were before. Let me give you some tips and some things that may enlighten you and help you to assimilate you on your journey. If you're a highly sensitive person, things may be triggers, let's call them, for you, that may not be for other people. Things like loud music, crowds, horns blaring, dogs barking, all of these things that a lot of people tend to be able to filter out and ignore or take for granted, really can bother a highly sensitive individual. You may have different things that bother you as a highly sensitive than other people. For instance, if you're a dog lover, dogs barking may not bother you as much. However, as my dogs shake under the table, thank you, Lily. However, some things may bother you that don't bother another highly sensitive. For instance, the dog barking, but maybe horns blaring bother you, or maybe loud screeches bother you, or loud music bothers you, or people talking loudly bothers you, or hearing somebody in the yard next to you when you're in a moment of silence or just trying to enjoy a few minutes of peace and solitude and rest and relax. And that is a trigger for me. I'll be the first one to admit when I'm in my yard and I can hear other people in their yard, sometimes it bothers me. However, I have to respect that it's their yard and it's close to my yard, depending on what house I'm at. And so, you know, they have as much right, I guess, to make noise as I do to want to enjoy my peace and solitude. Also, glaring lights. That's a big one, too. Bright lights, glaring lights. Strange smells, sometimes clutter and chaos bother the highly sensitive if they're used to being very organized and pay attention to detail. However, the anal portion of that can be assimilated. It's also a trait of codependency, just so you're aware. But having a chaotic environment or a cluttered environment may trigger you. Another thing that may bother you is being overly bored, as well as being too aroused. So overstimulation as well as understimulation may bother you. So if we find ourselves in a bored state and we're a HSP or a highly sensitive person, we may get up, move around, call a friend, get some coffee, put some music on, start a conversation with maybe somebody that you normally wouldn't have a conversation with, things like that. And then the other side of the spectrum would be too much arousal, being around too much noise, the person will become distressed, confused, can't think straight. The body just doesn't feel as coordinated as it normally does. You kind of have that feeling of lack of self-control. And this is all related to our nervous system. Some HSPs in a state of overstimulation may want to go take a nap, they might feel tired or drained all of a sudden, or just to escape, go close their eyes and rest. They may mentally shut down. Some people go to substance abuse, which is not the way to handle it, or a prescription medication, also not the way to go. It's important to note that HSPs are different, just as we're all different individually, and you know, some things may arouse one and not the other. Some might overstimulate and not the other. One thing, though, that's pretty much across the board is what might be moderately bothersome or arousing for some people is really highly arousing for highly sensitive people. So they become really frazzled. The book, Highly Sensitive Person, How to Thrive When the World Overwhelms You by Elaine and Aaron, says that a difference is largely inherited and is very real and normal, and that it can be observed in all higher animals, mice, cats, dogs, horses, monkeys, and humans. And her book says within a species, the percentage that is very sensitive to stimulation is usually about the same, around 15 to 20%. However, as I vocalized earlier, I feel with the shifts and people awakening and coming into their own, and just the percentage of the planet of children that are being born, in my opinion, aware of their gifts, which previously we would call gifted, but born aware of their gifts, because the timeline's being pushed forward, and we're just, because of Source, Father, Creator, whatever you want to call it, knows that there's a push on good versus evil, and you know, they're being born more awake and aware. I think it's considerably higher. I would guess it's probably around, I would even venture to say about 40% now. That book was published in 1996. However, I need to say that because of all of these movements that are out there and everybody feeling entitled, there are a lot of people that claim to be overstimulated and can't deal with, or rather, more importantly, they claim to not be able to deal with daily struggles as a result of their entitlement. That's entirely a different animal. That's just people being lazy and not wanting to deal with anything and wanting everything handed to them. I'm talking about the truly highly sensitive person here. So Ivan Pavlov coined the term transmarginal inhibition, which was, he was convinced that the most basic inherited difference amongst people was how they reach this shutdown point, and that the quick to shut down have a fundamentally different type of nervous system. And that also is from that book, Highly Sensitive Person. And I would tend to agree with that. The book also does talk about fear and danger, and the feeling of fear and the feeling of danger, and being able to distinguish the difference between the two. And that's just part of our journey as well. However, if you're intuitive, and most highly sensitive people are, if not all, are intuitive, and we all have these abilities, again, let me stress that, but you know, if we are in tune with our body's vibratory system and we feel that feeling in the pit of our stomach, we need to pay attention to that. The book also does talk about some traits that make you special if you're an HSP. You're better at spotting errors and avoiding making errors. You're highly conscientious. You're able to concentrate deeply, but we do best without distractions, in parentheses. You're especially good at tasks requiring vigilance, accuracy, speed, and the detection of minor differences. Able to process material to deeper levels of what psychologists call semantic memory, often thinking about our own thinking, and able to learn without being aware we have learned, and also deeply affected by other people's moods and emotions. So also a lot of traits in there for being empathic. And then it goes on to say our bodies are different too. Most of us have nervous systems that make us specialists in fine motor movements, good at holding still. Morning people, and in parentheses it says here, there are many exceptions, absolutely, because I am not a morning person. More affected by stimulants like caffeine, unless we are very used to them. More right-brained, and in parentheses, less linear, more creative in a synthesizing way. And more sensitive to things in the air. Yes, that means more hay fever and skin rashes. I can absolutely concur with that. And the book goes on to say, overall, again, our nervous systems seem designed to react to subtle experiences, which also makes us slower to recover when we must react to intense stimuli. But HSPs are not in a more aroused state all the time. We are not chronically aroused in day-to-day life or when we are asleep. we are just more aroused by new or prolonged stimulation. And then in parentheses, being an HSP is not the same as being neurotic, that is constantly anxious for no apparent reason. And I also agree. There's also a part in here called Shedding the Majority's Rule, which gives you some questions to ponder. And I think this would be a good exercise and a good way to end the episode for the most part. Number one, what was your parents' attitude towards your sensitivity? Did they want you to keep it or lose it? Did they think of it as an inconvenience, a shyness, a manliness, cowardice, a sense of artistic ability, or cute? What about your other relatives, your friends, and your teachers? Number two, think about the media, especially in childhood. Who were your role models and idols? Did they seem like HSPs, or were they people you now see you could never be like? Number three, consider your resulting attitude. How has it affected your career, romantic relationships, recreational activities, and friendships? Number four, how are you an HSP being treated now by the media? Think about positive and negative images of HSPs, which predominate. Note that when someone is a victim in a movie or book, he or she is often portrayed as by nature sensitive, vulnerable, over-aroused. This is good for dramatic effect because the victim is visibly shaken and upset, but bad for HSPs because victim comes to be equated with sensitivity. Number five, think about how HSPs have contributed to society. Look for examples you know personally or have read about. Abraham Lincoln is probably a place to start. And then finally, number six, think about your own contribution to society. What are you doing? Sculpting, raising children, studying physics, voting? You tend to reflect deeply on the issues, attend to the details, have a vision of the future, and attempt to be conscientious. Skipping around, it also says, think about the impact on you of not being the ideal for your culture. It has to affect you, not only how others have treated you, but how you have come to treat yourself. So there are some things there to think about. If you didn't recognize that you were an HSP before, maybe this is helping for you to see the light. And also, if you knew you were before, maybe some key points that will help you to understand a little bit better about who you are and possibly about how people perceive you. We'll talk about this more in future episodes. A word from the portable do it about your comfort zone. The very worst news about the comfort zone: in order to truly master the comfort zone, we have to learn to love it, just like we need to learn to love ourselves and our gifts and our abilities. R.A. Dixon said, "Love your enemies just in case your friends turn out to be a bunch of bastards." Another one, the bad news about the comfort zone is the comfort zone is never static. It is either expanding or contracting. If you're not consciously expanding the comfort zone, it contracts. Sol Bishop said, "In the heating and air conditioning trade, the point on the thermostat in which neither heating nor cooling must operate, around 72 degrees, is called the comfort zone. It's also known as the dead zone." And if our parents weren't on board and didn't recognize that we were HSPs when we were children, our parents, or whoever raised us, loved us in the most fundamental sense of that word. Maybe they didn't hug us all we wanted, but they fed us, clothed us, and physically nurtured us, such that we are at least alive today. Russell Bishop says, "I don't know any parents who look into the eyes of a newborn baby and say, 'How can we screw this kid up?'" How true is that? A lot of people didn't recognize these qualities and traits before they were pushed under the carpet, or we ignored them, or just didn't talk about them in public, right? We're in a new age. It's an age of loving each other, helping each other to learn and grow, to experience and fall in love with the life that we have and the lives that we could have should we choose to. And this is an ongoing conversation here on the Positude Podcast. If you need any help, please, please get a hold of me, Maggie_Hart, Maggie_Hart at Outlook.com. Thank you all so very much for listening. Have a great evening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.